the heavens and the earth and everything that was completed. On the seventh day, God had finished his work of creation, so he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy, because it was the day when he rested from all his works of creation. Remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. This includes you, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, and any foreigners living among you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and everything in them. But on the seventh day he rested. That is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. Remember that you were once slaves in Egypt, but the Lord your God brought you out with a strong hand and powerful arm. That is why the Lord your God has commanded you to rest on the Sabbath day.
We're now in week three of this six-week sermon series on the subject of our work. Before we get started this morning, I want to mention a book that we now have just arrived at the book table. This is Every Good Endeavor by Tim Keller, Connecting Your Work to God's Work. This is a book that I have been relying on very heavily in this sermon series. So if you want to hear some of the same ideas that we've been talking about, just expressed slightly more cogently, you can pick this up on your way out. It's a very good read. This morning, week three of the series, we're going to be taking a turn toward the practical. In weeks one and two, we had sermons that were a little bit more theological and big picture in nature. And the idea wasn't so much that you would take these concepts and go and apply them first thing on Monday morning. Rather, the hope was that some of these ideas and concepts would filter down into your thinking over time and affect your working life over the long haul. This morning, though, we're shifting gears. We're going to be talking about one of the most pressing issues and immediately applicable issues there is when it comes to our work, if not the most immediately applicable and pressing, which is this issue of work-life balance. Obviously, nowhere is it more pressing than it is here in New York. As I said last week, the reason people come to New York is so that they can work harder than they would work anywhere else on Earth. Which means that for most of the people in this room, not everybody, but for most of the people in this room, the number one problem you have with your work is knowing how and when to stop. How much work is too much work? How do I keep work from eating up every other area of my life? That's what we're going to talk about this morning. This is one of those wonderful instances. It doesn't happen all that often, so enjoy it, soak it up, where the Bible has a silver bullet, essentially, to our problem. It has a single, totally comprehensive, guaranteed, effective solution to our problem. And it can be expressed in a single word, the word Sabbath. The Bible's answer to the problem of overwork, the problem of workaholism, the problem of work-life balance is all encapsulated in this idea of Sabbath, and that's what we're going to be talking about this morning. So, four sections to this morning's sermon center around four questions that I want us to ask about this subject of Sabbath. First, what is it? Second, why do we need it? Third, how do we do it? And fourth, is it enough? Those four questions will make up the four sections. First, what is it? Second, why do we need it? Third, how do we do it? And fourth, is it enough? So first, what is it? I think everybody is pretty much clear on this already. Even if you're not familiar with the concept of Sabbath from Christianity, living in New York, you're probably familiar with it from Judaism. But just in case, just so we're all on the same page, I'll spell it out. What we're talking about when we talk about a Sabbath is a weekly 24-hour period of rest. So 6 days a week you work, and one day a week you don't work at all, you rest instead. This practice is a big deal in the Bible. It's not like a tip, you know, like an idea. It's not a suggestion. It's rather mandatory, and it's pretty central and foundational. It comes up in some of the biggest passages and biggest places. So you heard some of these in the scripture reading this morning. The first place we see the idea of Sabbath is right off the bat in Genesis 2, the very beginning of the Bible. God sets the pattern by taking a Sabbath himself. He works for 6 days on creation, and then he takes a day of rest. The second place you see it is, of course, in the Ten Commandments, which you also heard read from this morning. There are 613 different commandments of various types. in the Old Testament Hebrew scriptures. And this Sabbath, this taking a day of rest, is not tucked away in some obscure verse as one of those 613. Rather, it's elevated and is given a spot within the top 10. Now, you've probably heard before that this list of 10 commandments can be separated into two sublists. There are obligations to God, and there are obligations to others. So commandments 5 through 10, the latter 6 commandments, are our obligations to others. Honor your father and mother, don't commit adultery, don't commit murder, don't steal, don't lie, don't covet. Commandments 1 through 4 are our obligations directly to God. No other gods before me, no idols, don't take my name in vain. And then the fourth one, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. It's one of 4, and only 4, direct obligations we have to God. It's incredibly important, yet we don't treat it with that kind of importance. Matt preached on the Sabbath 2 years ago in January, and because it was in January, one of the things he said is that one of his New Year's resolutions, this was in 2013, was going to be keeping the Sabbath. But then he made the observation, you know, it's kind of strange to say one of your New Year's resolutions is going to be keeping one of the Ten Commandments, like saying, you have a New Year's resolution, not murder this year, not adultery this year. And what he's getting at with that observation is there's a big gap between the seriousness with which the Bible treats this topic and the seriousness with which we treat it. In the Bible, it's one of the Ten Commandments, and for us, it's a New Year's resolution. And the reason for that is we don't understand why it's so important, and we don't understand why we need it. So that takes us to section number 2. First, what it is. Secondly, this morning, second question, why do we need it? 2 reasons. There are going to be 2 sub-points to this second section of the sermon. 2 reasons we need the Sabbath. There are more than 2, but we don't have time to talk about 2 this morning. And those 2 reasons are to break our slavery and to build our trust. Take those 1 at a time. So first, to break our slavery. In the 3rd excerpt from the scripture we heard this morning, what God says to the Israelites is, remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and I brought you out with a mighty hand. Therefore, always observe the Sabbath. And at first that doesn't really make a lot of sense. It kind of is a non-separate. What do those 2 things have to do with each other? You used to be slaves, I brought you out with a mighty hand, so observe the Sabbath. But what he's saying is that slaves can't take a day of rest. Now you're free. So celebrate your freedom by taking a day of rest. Say, okay, fine, that makes sense. What does that have to do with me? I've never been a slave. But we can put it in another way. Because the reverse is also true. We said that people who are slaves can't take a day of rest, but it's also the case that people who can't take a day of rest are slaves. And that's the condition that a lot of people in Europe find themselves in with respect to their work, a position of enslavement to their work. It's voluntary slavery, they chose it. It's well-compensated slavery. It's even prestigious slavery in some cases, but it's still slavery nonetheless. It's still a condition of slavery. And what it means is that you don't have freedom, and you don't take a Sabbath, you can't take a day off, because you don't have that choice, you don't have the freedom to do that. It's the reason for this, the slavery of modern work, is there's a lot of different societal and global factors that have converged to make it what it is. So in the first place, there's this increased competition, so there's no such thing as job security anymore. In the second place, there's these huge compensation packages such that everybody feels like, well, we're paying you so much, it's justified. These unreasonable demands are justified. But the biggest factor by far is technology. This technology such that you can now work anywhere, which means that you end up working everywhere, and work spills into every nook and cranny of your life. And I love that we think that our phones are these tools that we use, these things that serve us, when really it will be clear to anyone who came from an outside culture and observed our culture, is that these are our electronic leashes. These are our ball and chain. They are our shackles. They are the number one symbol of your slavery, and they're the number one thing that perpetuates your slavery, because they're always with you, which means your work is always with you. Slavery. And the idea of Sabbath is to say, enough, I'm not going to be a slave anymore. The idea of Sabbath is to declare, to definitely declare your freedom from slavery. That's the first reason we need Sabbath, to break our slavery. As I said, there are 2 reasons we need it. not only do we need it to break our slavery, we also need it to build our trust. And by build our trust, I mean strengthen our sense of dependence upon the one who made us and the one who holds us together. There are these great couple of verses in Psalm 127, verses 1 and 2. We looked at them several times before on Sunday morning, which go, "Unless the Lord builds the house, those who labor work in vain. Unless the Lord watches the city, the watchmen stay awake in vain. In vain you rise up early and go to bed late, eating the bread of anxious toil, for the Lord gives to his beloved sleep." And what the psalm is saying is that anything that's worth doing in your life is going to have to be done with God's assistance and with God's blessing. Now, I can say that anything worth doing in your life is going to have to be done with God's assistance and God's blessing. And it's nice, pious-sounding sentiment. But I think that most people don't believe that. You may be nod when I say it. You don't believe it. And the reason you don't believe it is because we have all seen plenty of things accomplished without God in your own life and in the lives of others. See, all things, sorts of things happen just by grit and determination and willpower and know-how. They don't have anything to do with God. But the psalm doesn't say nothing can be accomplished without God. It doesn't say you can't do anything without God. That'd be obviously false. What the psalm says is you can't do anything worth doing without God. So you may be able to accomplish a great deal, but the question is, when you accomplish, does it make you feel the way you thought it was going to make you feel, or do you still feel empty? You may be able to attain a high degree of success, but that success will be in vain. What the psalmist is saying is, if God is required to do the things that are worth doing, then this inability to rest on your part, this going to bed late and rising up early, what that says is you're not trusting. Because if God's on your team, he gives rest to those who love us. But we don't want it. We don't want to accept that gift of rest. We're reluctant to accept it. And that reluctance to accept rest is a sign of immaturity. If you have young kids like we do, you know that your kids don't want to rest. They don't want to go to sleep. They don't want to take a nap. Their eyelids are 90% closed. You can barely put one foot in front of the other. And it's like, well, I'm just not tired. No, I'm sorry. I'm simply not tired. And you know, and then there's the bathroom breaks and the drinks of water and on and on. The refusal to rest is a sign of immaturity. And it's the same for us. It's a sign of immaturity on our part. Not only that, but a reluctance to rest is also a sign of enormous pride. Because what you're saying essentially is, well, sorry, I'm just way too important to take a day off. There are way too many people depending on me, and I have far too much to do. I couldn't possibly take a full 24 hours of rest. Okay? You may feel that way. Let me remind you that Jesus took a day of rest every day during his life. God himself took a day of rest after the 6 days of creation. So who are you again? What makes you think that you're so important? It's a sign of enormous pride. And taking a Sabbath is a way to spiritually reorient yourself and remind yourself, I'm not the one who's making things happen. I'm not the one who's bringing money to my family. I'm not the one who's holding all of this together. God is, and I can trust him. It's the second reason we need the Sabbath, to build a trust. And that wraps up the second section of the sermon. First, to break our slavery, and second, to build our trust. So let's move on now to the third section of the sermon, answering this third question, which is, how do we do it? If that's what it is, and that's why we need it, how do you do it? Let's say you're convinced that it's a good idea. How do you do it? And the answer to that is, the brief answer that we're going to be unpacking in this third section, is that if you're really going to make the Sabbath a true day of rest, you're going to need a set of rules. Now, as soon as I say that, there's going to be a negative knee-jerk reaction for many of you, because there's this sense of, well, wait a minute, I thought Christianity wasn't a religion of rules. I thought the whole idea was to do away with the rules. And in this area of Sabbath in particular, there's this tendency among Christians to look down upon the Jewish observance of the Sabbath, particularly because of the rules. So you may know that in Judaism there are 39 particular categories of work that are prohibited on the Sabbath. 39 things you can't do, like plowing, and building, and writing, and kindling a fire, and so forth. And these 39 categories, which are still observed by Orthodox Jews today, sometimes interact in interesting ways with the modern life. So you've probably seen in the city these Sabbath elevators where they open on every floor so that nobody has to push a button because operating an electrical switch is considered work on the Sabbath. And it's easy to kind of roll your eyes at that and say that's silly. And on the one hand, there's some validity to that position because Jesus himself was critical of the rigidity of Sabbath rules in his own day, arguing that there should be exceptions to Sabbath rules. I'm fairly certain that Jesus would take great pleasure in pushing an elevator button on the Sabbath with his rabbi watching. So there is some validity to that position of criticizing the rules. But on the other hand, who are we, the most workaholic culture that has ever existed, to turn up our nose at any attempt, no matter how misguided, at giving human beings this one thing that they so desperately need and can't get, which is rest? Judith Shulevitz is this writer for the New York Times, and she had an article a number of years ago in the New York Times Magazine called Bring Back the Sabbath. And she talks about how she was raised Jewish, but you know, like a lot of New Yorkers, had kind of left her faith as an adult, and she ended up coming back to her faith, and the thing that brought her back was the lack of Sabbath. So I want to read you an excerpt from her article. It's a little bit long, but it touches on a couple of important things. First, it touches on what we were just talking about, the spiritual need for the Sabbath. But then toward the end of this excerpt, she talks specifically about what we're talking about in this section, which is the need for Sabbath rules, the need to get serious. So she says this about her life before she observed the Sabbath. She says, "My mood would darken every weekend until by Saturday afternoon I would be unresponsive and morose. My normal routine, which involved brunch with friends, made me feel impossibly restless. Then I began to do something that, as a teenager, profoundly put off by her religious education, I could have never imagined ever wanting to do. I began dropping in on a nearby synagogue. Finally, I developed a theory for my condition. If formerly people suffered from the Sabbath regulations, I now was suffering from lack thereof. There's ample evidence that our relationship to work is out of whack. Let me argue on behalf of an institution that has kept workaholism in reasonable check for thousands of years. Most people mistakenly believe all you have to do to stop working is to not work. But the inventors of the Sabbath understood that it was a much more complicated undertaking. You cannot downshift casually and easily. This is why the Puritan and Jewish Sabbaths were so exactingly intentional. The rules did not exist to torture the faithful. Interrupting the ceaseless round of striving requires a surprisingly strenuous act of the will, one that has to be bolstered by habit as well as by social sanction." And what she's saying there is, essentially, not working is actually a lot of hard work. It's a lot of hard work to stop working because we're not used to it. Rest is foreign to us. And so if you're going to rest, that means that you're going to have to work really hard, discipline yourself, focus on engaging in this alternate activity. Which brings up an important point of clarification. It's that the Sabbath is not just a day off, it's a day of. It's a day of rest. And rest is more than just being off. Rest is more than just the absence of any activity. Rather, it's a specific type of activity that has to be engaged in. So you can think of it as if on your board you have two switches. Both are on-off switches, work and rest. And so they can't both be on at the same time. You know, if work is on, then rest can't also be on, and vice versa. But more importantly, turning one off doesn't automatically turn the other one on. So you can switch work off, and rest is still off. Now you're just doing nothing. You're not working. You're not resting. You're just floating, binge-watching, or you know, reading pointless articles, or browsing the internet, whatever it is. And that's how we spend our leisure time. But it's not the same as rest. It doesn't accomplish the same things as the Sabbath does. Remember what Judith Shulevitz said. She said she had her routine for downtime. She liked to do. She wasn't working on Saturday, she would go out to brunch with friends, and that was her thing. But she said, after a while, this routine started to make her feel, quote, restless. Maybe you never stopped to notice that word, restless. Restless, without rest. So if you feel restless when you stop working, and my sense is that a lot of you do, is because you haven't figured out the other half of the equation. You know how to switch off work, but you haven't yet learned how to turn on rest. And that's what the rules are about. That's what you need rules to teach you how to. So I'm going to give you four suggested rules, and they are just not their suggestions. These are not found in the Bible. And what I'd say, I guess, about them is that, you know, you don't have to adopt them, but take them seriously. And if you discount any of them, you better have a reason why you're discounting them. Because I have a reason why I'm including them. So you need a reason why you're going to discount if you do that. You know, in the sense that the Christian Sabbath isn't going to be different from the Jewish Sabbath is that you do have to make your own rules. You know, we don't have the rules prescribed for us. And that's both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in the sense that you don't have obsolete rules that you're following just because somebody else told you to. It's a curse, and that the responsibility is on you to choose rules and to give the Sabbath structure. So I'm going to give you four as a suggestion. We're going to put these up on the screen as we go. Rule number one, take 24 straight hours. So the first temptation is to say, well, I can keep the spirit of the Sabbath by taking 12 hours here and 12 hours there, and that's not the way it works. There's a totally different dynamic by taking 24 consecutive hours than there is by taking bits and pieces here. And then, so everything else we're going to talk about, the other three rules, assume 24 straight hours. Now, when those 24 straight hours are is totally up to you. So, you know, traditionally the Christian Sabbath is on Sunday. I do think it makes sense if you can include Sunday morning in your Sabbath so that coming to church can be part of that time, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But that doesn't necessarily mean you have to take all day Sunday. Let's say you have to get back on email for work on Sunday afternoon. You can take Saturday at 1 p.m. to Sunday at 1 p.m. or something like that. Anyway, 24 straight hours is rule number one. Rule number two, stay completely offline. And this is going to be by far the most controversial of the four. It's also going to be, I think, the most life-changing if you're able to adopt it. So there have been all sorts of studies done on the benefits of staying offline for 24 hours a day, or a week, one day a week, how it's so good for your brain and good for your health. But that's not even the reason I want to argue in favor of this. By offline, I mean, you know, everything. No internet, no phone, no computer, no email, no text, no TV. You say, that sounds really fun. But hear me out. The reason I want to argue for it is not even for the health benefits. The reason I want to argue for it is based in the wording of the fourth commandment itself. What God says is, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. What does holy mean? Holy means set apart. It means different. It means unique. It means reserved. It means special. And I can think of no better way to make this one day out of seven unique and special and different and reserved by going offline. Because what's normal? Normal is online. That's what defines our normal life. Now, your normal life is with your brain always connected to some other artificial brain, your eyes always connected to some other artificial reality, some screen. That's the way we live now. Many of you, your hands are permanently molded in the shape of an iPhone. It's this appendage, it's part of your body. And there's no better way to keep this out of holy than to say, why don't we just do something different for one day out of seven? Why don't we shake things up? Now, when you go through withdrawals at first, of course, it's not going to be fun at first. First week, second week, third week. But after a while, my guess is that you're actually going to come to look forward to this aspect of this out. So that's the second suggested rule. Take 24 hours completely offline. Rule number three, reserve time for Bible reading, prayer, and reflection. Reserve time for Bible reading, prayer, and reflection. The point of the Sabbath is not just to rest your body, and it's not just to rest your mind. It's also to rejuvenate your emotions and your soul, and rejuvenate your spirit. And the way you do that is by reconnecting with God. Many of you, you may sometimes have this week where you go an entire week without even thinking about God. And the point of the Sabbath is to be a failsafe, to be a backstop, so that one week doesn't turn into 2 weeks and turn into 3 weeks. It's a reset button. And the way you do that is by going to God again, by reconnecting with Him, by prayer, and by Bible reading. And we've offered these various plans in the past for prayer and Bible reading. And what we've suggested in the past is that you try to pray and or read the Bible 3 or 4 days a week. And I think some of you may have started those plans and then fall off the wagon at some point. And so what I'd like to suggest today is, why don't you just restart with one day a week? Instead of 3 or 4, forget about that. Just do it one day a week. One day a week on the Sabbath, say, this is going to be my day for now to read the Bible and to pray. You see what's happening there. You know, you have 6 days a week where you're online. You have one day a week where you're offline. You have 6 days a week where you don't think about God. You have one day a week where you do. And what's happening is the Sabbath is becoming an alternate reality, essentially. You're this different person one day a week, totally different person than you are the other 6 days. And my guess is it's going to be a person that you actually like better than the person you are the other 6 days of the week. Which is why another component of this third rule is not just time for Bible reading and prayer, but time for reflection, time for looking at yourself and asking yourself some hard questions. And Jesus has that question in the Gospels that he asks, what good is it if a man gains the whole world and yet loses his soul? And the Sabbath is your opportunity to ask yourself that question once every 7 days. To look back and say, what did I give my life for the last 6 days? How did I spend my time, my energy, my money? The way that I actually spent my time and energy and money line up with the way I said I wanted to spend my time and energy and money. Sabbath is your chance to ask these questions. So that's the third suggested rule. Reserve time for Bible reading, prayer, and reflection. And rule number 4, lastly, go slow. So let's say you observe the first 3 rules. You take 24 straight hours, you can stay offline, and you reserve a chunk of time for these spiritual activities. The question is, okay, besides not work, what do I do with the rest of the time? And the answer is, it's not so much what you do with the rest of the time as how you do it. Because any activity can be done in a restless, frantic way, or can be done in a restful way. So, traditional leisure activities are perfectly fine. You know, when we were talking about brunch with friends earlier, I'm not down on brunch with friends. The brunch with friends is a perfectly appropriate Sabbath activity, just as our normal recreational activities, going to a park or going to a museum or whatever else, as long as it's done in a restful way. And that's something that you have to check yourself on. And pace is going to be a big part of that. Are you moving slowly? Because even the most Sabbathy activity, new word, can become restless if it's done at a pace. Now, let's take one example. The Sabbath activity par excellence is coming to church. That's the thing to do on the Sabbath. But even that, you know, if you do it in such a way that you're rushing out the door, trying to get the kids ready, you're hurrying because you're late, all of a sudden it's not very restful. Now, I'm not saying you don't come to church. Well, I don't think it would be very restful today, so I'm not going to go. I didn't say it. What I'm saying is that sometimes it's going to take preparing and thinking ahead if you're going to have the luxury of moving at a slower pace. So, and doing less. You know, maybe it means you do one less thing on Saturday night and instead take time to think through the morning and prepare and lay everything out and mentally rehearse so that the morning routine of getting to church isn't hurried or frantic, but it's restful. That's going to be the case with all of these, by the way. They're all going to require thinking ahead and planning and advanced preparation. You're not going to be able to just turn your devices off for 24 hours unless the 24 hours before you turn them off, you think through, what am I going to need the 24 hours ahead? How am I going to actually make this happen? You have to get serious about it. Same thing with this time alone. You're going to have to get serious about planning when that is, or else the Sabbath will lapse and you won't have had the opportunity to do it. So there you have it. There are 4 suggested rules for keeping the Sabbath. You can take them or leave them, but before you leave them, think twice about it. And realize that you're going to have to add some rules to it. That's not going to be enough. Every person is different. You're going to have to add some more rules to this list of 4. But I don't want to end there, even though that wraps up kind of the practical section of the sermon. I think it'd be wrong and misleading in there, which is why there's a 4th and final section of the sermon and 1 last question that I want us to ask, which is it enough? That's what it is. That's why we need it. That's how you do it. But if you did all of that, even if you kept the Sabbath perfectly, would that be enough to give you true rest? The answer to that is no. To explain what I mean, I want to go back to the same Drew Shulovitz article that we quoted from earlier, because she has a really insightful point later in the article on what we're talking about now. She says this. She says, when the Sabbath was still sacred, Not only did drudgery give way to festivity and family gatherings and occasional worship, but the machinery of self-censorship shut down, too, stilling the eternal inner murmur of self-reproach. What's she talking about there? The machinery of self-censorship, the eternal murmur of self-reproach. What she's saying is there's two kinds of work. There's our external work that we're doing on the outside that everybody can see. But underneath that, there's another type of work, a deeper work, an inner work, a work beneath the work that's always going on 24/7. And that work is driven by this machinery of self-censorship. That work is driven by this inner murmur of self-reproach, and it's the work of trying to prove ourselves through our work. That's what makes work so exhausting. It's not the work itself, it's what you're trying to prove through it. For example, in the only Rocky movie that was any good, the first one, somebody asks Rocky at some point, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you working so hard? Why are you running up the steps of the Philadelphia Library with trumpets blaring? You know, what is this all about? What is driving you so hard? And what he says is, I want to show that I can go the distance. Then I'll know I'm not a bum. And what he's talking about is this right here. You know, that's the way Rocky says it. The way Judith Shulevitz says it is the machinery of self-censorship, the inner murmur of self-reproach. But it's the same thing. Proving that you're not a bum. And for many of you, that's what your work is about. Your work isn't about the work itself. It's not about your company, it's not about your colleagues, it's not about your customers, it's not about your clients. Your work is about you. It's about you proving to everyone, yourself, your parents, your spouse, your kids, your friends, your critics, everyone who has ever slighted you in your life, and you've remembered every single time it happened, proving to all of those people that you're not a bum, that you're not a joke, that you are legitimate, that you are worthy, that you're above. That's what work is really about for most of us. And it's absolutely exhausting. And it's work that never ends and never stops, never ceases. And so true rest in line with that work, that undercurrent of work, is impossible. How do you get true rest? How do you make that work stop? Go back to where we started this morning in Genesis 2, where it talks about God resting on the seventh day of creation. It raises an interesting question, which is, in what sense can God rest? You know, he's not tired. He doesn't need to rejuvenate or refresh himself. So how can Scripture say that God rested? One way that people would have answered that is to say, well, it just means that he's setting an example for us. That's why he rested, to show us how to do it. But it doesn't say he pretended to rest as an example. It says he actually rested. So in what sense can God truly rest if he wasn't tired? Interesting if you go back through the creation account. And what you see is that every day after whatever he makes that day, he sits back and looks at what he makes and says, that's good. Next day he makes whatever he makes that day, he sits back and looks and says, that's good. And then the final day, after 6 days, after it's all completed, it says he looks at everything he made and says, that's very good. And then he rested. And what it's getting at is that true rest isn't just stopping work. True rest is finishing work. That's why God rested, because he had finished. That's the sense in which an attorney rests her case. Case is finished. And when you rest in that sense, you can't just be done and leave it to the side. You have to actually be satisfied with what you've accomplished. So how do you get to that place? How do you get to that place of being satisfied when the work we're talking about is yourself? How do you become satisfied with that? The answer is that you're not going to be able to do it on your own. There's a place in the Gospels where Jesus calls himself the Lord of the Sabbath. Another way of putting that would be to say he's the Lord of rest. In other words, if you want true rest, you're going to have to come to him. He says that explicitly himself elsewhere. He says in Matthew 11, come unto me, all you who are weary and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. You'll find rest for yourselves. So how can he offer that kind of rest? It's only because on the cross, he takes our restlessness. The point of Jesus going to the cross is to silence that murmur of self-reproach and to shut down that machinery of self-censorship. Because on the cross, he absorbs. What the cross is, it is God himself absorbing and making irrelevant all of your shortcomings, all of your failures, all of your inability to measure up, all of the times that you let someone or yourself down. He takes all of that and he says, now it's done with anymore. We don't need to worry about that anymore. The last words of Christ in the Gospel of John are, "It is finished." You may have heard before that the English translation, "it is finished," is a translation of a single Greek word there, the word tetelestai. And what is this word tetelestai? It's a commercial word. It's a legal word. Archaeologists have found receipts from the first century that have this word tetelestai written across the top of them. What it means is paid in full. The debt has been paid in full. And it's that debt, that sense of owing someone, owing everyone, owing something, it keeps you working so hard, because that's the debt you're trying to counterbalance. That's the thing that you're trying to get rid of. And what Jesus says is that it's finished. That debt has been paid. Compare that to the last words of Buddha, which were reportedly, "strive without ceasing." And Christ's last words are, "stop striving." You don't need to strive anymore. You're good enough just the way you are. I love you enough to die for you just the way you are. You don't need to work to prove yourself anymore. "Come unto me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. You'll find rest for your souls, true rest." So we can keep the Sabbath, we can observe the Sabbath, and we should, but it's never going to result in true rest unless we go to the Lord of the Sabbath. Let's pray. God, many of us are tired. Many of us take time off and relax and then go back to work feeling just as tired as we did before we took the time off. I pray that you would teach us this discipline of Sabbath keeping. I pray that you would help us to make the hard choices that maybe aren't fun at first, but that in the long run give us this rest that we're looking for. We know that you build us to run 7 days a week. We know that we're fighting our own programming, and I ask that you would give us the humility to bow before the way you made us and to become true human beings. God, we also pray about this deeper kind of rest, this rest from the work of proving ourselves and justifying ourselves. I ask this morning that if there's anyone here who is trying on their own strength to make a name for themselves, to prove to everyone they know that they're worth something, I ask this morning that they understand for the first time that because of Christ, they're good enough already. I ask that as we take this discipline of Sabbath more seriously, you would use it not just to recharge our minds and bodies, but that you would use it to reorient our hearts and to teach us that in you we can have true rest for our souls. We pray these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.